This is 89.9 WWNO. I hope you and your family are safe following the recent storm. We are headed for another art-filled weekend. But first, as we dry out and electrical power returns to homes across the region, it's perhaps a time of reflection for many, as Hurricane Isaac eerily reminds us of that day in August 2005, 7 years ago, when Hurricane Katrina struck the Gulf Coast and changed the way we live and think. We'll reflect and explore offerings on and off the beaten path. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. For one local author, living in post-Katrina New Orleans has meant figuring out how to write about a city that's forever changed. In this encore presentation from NPR's series Crime in the City, we'll hear from writer Julie Smith, who talked with NPR's J.J. Sutherland in the Crescent City 3 years after Katrina.
There's a door. A shirtless drunk is passed out in front of it. Then a bar. Then another door. Doesn't look promising. The stairwell is even less promising. Dark. Decrepit. Then, on the third floor, a door opens into a space seemingly the size of a bowling alley. An assault of color leaps off the walls, oranges and blues and greens. Pillars are painted in fantastic designs. The chandeliers are draped, no covered, with gold Mardi Gras beads. The far wall, could be 100 feet away, is lined with books. Mysteries, mostly. Many of them written by the woman whose home this is, Julie Smith.
They say that New Orleans must be a great place to write mysteries, because there's so much crime there. And I always sort of have to laugh and say, oh yeah, that's just great. But of course, that has nothing to do with it. It's all about the secrets.
Julie Smith's New Orleans is full of secrets. The most famous detective she's invented, Skip Langdon of New Orleans Police Homicide, makes a living out of exposing those secrets. Skip is a tall, large woman who feels slightly out of place in her own body in her home of New Orleans. Smith says she represents her adolescent self, although they both obviously love the city they live in spite of its flaws. Here she is reading from her novel, House of Blues.
Yet despite crime and corruption, New Orleans remains arguably the most beautiful American city, the most gracious, the most charming. It is also the most eccentric. Walker Percy, one of its most revered writers, noted that here, the tourist is apt to see more nuns and naked women than he ever saw before. The combination being the intriguing part.
Smith says that everyone is welcome in New Orleans as long as they're not boring. On a hot, sticky day in July, Smith sits her hat on her head and ventures out into the city she loves and the secrets it hides, and how those secrets are inevitably revealed in a place where everyone seems to know everyone.
It is a city and a village at the same time. It's like there are only half a dozen people living here. Nobody has any secrets from anybody. Although they do. It's just that eventually everybody finds them out.
The drive uptown isn't long, but it is a world away. Graceful mansions, looking as if they're showing off to each other, line the streets of the Garden District. It was here that the Americans who came to the city hundreds of years ago built to impress the French locals. Didn't work, but their vanity has left a beautiful stain on the land. Smith walks up to one house which is in every guidebook. It is a sonnet written in balconies and iron lace. Surrounding its gardens is a fence made to look like cornstalks, leaves wrapping their way up, the finials bunches of metal-ripe corn that look almost good enough to eat. Julie Smith studies the mansion, which one of her novels housed a large Southern Gothic family, a corrupt judge, and of course, a murder.
Look how huge it is. Is that beautiful? But you can imagine lots of old family secrets occurring there, can't you? All kinds of stuff.
Only a short ferry ride away is a place very few tourists ever go, Algiers Point. It's a quiet neighborhood, says Smith. Affordable houses, not much crime, a good place to raise a family. But that's not quite what she has in mind as she leads the way to the top of the levee that hulks high between the houses and the Mississippi River.
I think it's just a divine place to dump a body if you should need to. I hope you never need to. What do you think? Would that be a good place?
She walks down the side of the levee to the woods, a verdant green of vines and plants.
How about if you went on the other side of those weeds? How perfect could that be? You probably should not hang out with too many crime writers. It'll really warp your sense of perspective.
Back on the other side of the river, the sun begins to set, and Julie Smith walks back through her favorite part of the city, which she never tires of, the French Quarter.
Sometimes you walk in the quarter, if you lived here as long as I am, and you look around and you think, am I really living here? Do I really get to look at this all the time? A beautiful and a really funky, broken down kind of way. Better yet, I mean, the really best part is it's really quirky.
At the corner of St. Philip and Bourbon is her character Skip Langdon's favorite bar. Her favorite because it steps from her house and it has a hot bartender. It's called Jean Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop, supposedly the oldest bar in New Orleans. It's dark, and perhaps a fitting place to talk about the most horrific secret of New Orleans. It came to light almost 3 years ago during Hurricane Katrina, that the billions of dollars spent building levees to protect the city were for naught. Julie Smith's last novel was published just a week before the storm hit the city. The night before the waters came, she had a reading at a local bookstore. She hasn't published a book since.
I've had people say to me, I always read mysteries before I go to a city because that's how I learn what's really going on there. And I feel like that's my job, is to tell what's really going on here. And until I figure out what's really going on here, I'm not sure how to write. So it has changed and is changing me, and for a while really immobilized me.
It's an epical change, she says. The city has been irrevocably shaped by a devastation on a scale that is still almost impossible to grasp 3 years later. She speaks of the thousands of houses and hundreds of lives ended, of an almost impossible road back for a city that feels abandoned and betrayed by its own government. With all that, she asks, who would want to read a book about the death of just one person, which is what a murder mystery is? When asked how Skip would have handled the storm, Smith says she would have stayed. She would have been heroic, but then she pauses.
If I really think about it, I feel she would have gone into a depression afterward. She would have seen things that were really hard to handle, and she would have become very depressed for a period of time, but she would have got past that. She would have handled it.
Julie Smith says she's handling it too. She's writing again. It took her a while, but she hopes that someday she'll begin to understand her changed city enough to have Skip Langdon once again begin uncovering its secrets. J.J. Sutherland, NPR News, New Orleans.
J.J. Sutherland is an award-winning journalist who covers the Pentagon for NPR. Since Hurricane Katrina, City Park has generated some serious revenue. WWNO's host for Notes from New Orleans, Sharon Litwin, talked with the park's CEO, Bob Becker, about his first-hand account regarding the revitalization of the iconic Mid-City Park.
Every one of us has memories, some recent, some far off. There are memories of people, memories of events. But when it comes to memories of places, it seems there's one particular location in this city that strikes a chord in the heart of many New Orleanians.
Well, it didn't take me too long when I got to the park after 2001 to really discover that virtually everybody in the city had a memory of City Park. And, they were mostly good memories, but memories nonetheless. And either you went for your first horseback ride, or your dad taught you how to fish there, or you learned how to play golf, or you went to the amusement park, or whatever it was, people had terrific memories.
That's Bob Becker, executive director of City Park. This Buffalo, New York native came here 40 years ago to join the city's urban planning staff and, like so many others, never left. In 2001, he took on another challenge. City Park, at 1,300 acres, is one of the largest public parks in the country, and a site that at the time neither the city nor the state chose to claim.
The issue of who owns and who governs the park has always been a subject for discussion, but is actually fairly clear. The City of New Orleans owns the land in which the park sits, and the City Park Improvement Association has been vested with the authority by both the city and the state to operate and develop the park, and of course, since Hurricane Katrina, to recover the park.
Now, after 6 long years of quiet determination and serious hard work, the park has reached a new milestone.
Well, in early 2012, we have raised over $100 million for the park's recovery and restoration and implementation of the park's master plan. We decided early on, our board and our staff, that we were not just going to repair the park. We were not just going to fix the park because, frankly, a lot of the park had fallen into disrepair and it wasn't acceptable to fix it. So we decided we were going to fundamentally build a brand new park. So we looked around and decided we needed a plan to recover from and hit upon a plan that included first trying to clean up. And that was a big effort. Once we did that, then we tried to reopen some of the park's revenue generating facilities. And actually the first event that we did was Celebration in the Oaks, which we did right in December of 2005, which is an extremely emotional time for our staff and for people because it was one of the very first things to open after the hurricane, and it gave people some place to go at Christmas time. It gave them some place to go with their children and forget their personal issues and enjoy Christmas. And of course, it also helped us because it helped raise money.
One thing we can say about Bob Becker and his board, they never gave up and they did think big. Simply returning to old memories was not their idea of progress.
We've come a long way. We are probably two-thirds of the way of reaching our goal. And we hope to finish the fundraising and finish the park's master plan by 2018, which is the 300th birthday of the city. And we always felt having a completely renovated park with new facilities and some of the old classic facilities that people had come to love would be a great gift to the people of this region on the city's 300th birthday. And while we're not there yet, we've made great progress towards it.
Now new memories are being made at the park. Plans are in the work for a 36-hole miniature golf course and a second adult championship golf course, as well as a children's water park. For more information about City Park's plans for the future, go to wwno.org or nolavie.com. For WWNO, I'm Sharon Litwin.
You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm Diane Mack.
If you are suffering from cabin fever after days of heat with no electricity following Isaac, the arts may provide a healing balm. Save the date, Wednesday, September 5th. That's when the 4th annual Culture Collision kicks off a citywide celebration of New Orleans' cultural season. The party, billed as a happy hour with a purpose, continues to grow. Jess Brown, one of the original co-founders, remembers the event's humble beginning.
It's almost incomprehensible. It's gotten to be so big. You know, 4 years ago, we started out and we just wanted to kind of bridge the gap between all of the arts organizations in town. So we said, let's have a party. And it has just morphed into this giant thing. I had to cut it off at 61 arts organizations from around the area. And it's just gotten so big that this year we actually had to change the location. We've been at NOMA for the past 3 years, and we were out of room. So many people wanted to participate and attend that we had to upgrade. So this year we're setting up at Generations Hall, and it's going to be huge.
More than 2,000 people are expected for the cocktail party that's sprinkled with a big dose of cultural offerings.
Arts organizations from your biggest ones in town, the New Orleans Opera, Loyola University's Montage Series, down to the New Orleans Film Festival, the Photo Alliance, Craft Mafia, pretty much every arts and culture organization that we could reach is going to be there. And they will have information about their upcoming season, what they're doing. It'll be an opportunity for these groups to recruit volunteers, to attract new audience members. A lot of the organizations do free giveaways throughout the evening that can range from tickets to upcoming events that they have on season to they've actually put pieces of art up for the giveaways. Some people do merch from their gift stores. And it's a great networking opportunity because, I mean, if 2,000 like-minded individuals who are interested in the arts are in one venue, you're going to meet a lot of good people.
And Brown says all that schmoozing is good not only for the arts community, but for the city of New Orleans as well.
The arts are such an essential part of New Orleans history, and the history of the people here. We are a city that thrives on good music, good art, good food. And the arts and culture organizations really are the soul of the city. We're what make this place such a wonderful place to live and such a unique place to live. So it is essential to the success of New Orleans that arts and culture organizations continue to thrive and continue to excel. And it's essential that we continue to develop our audiences and enlighten the community as to all of the offerings, not just the big stuff, but everything that's going on in this city. And that's what Culture Collision does. We just want to share with everyone how great New Orleans is.
Don't forget your dancing shoes, as DJ Maddie will be on hand for a jamming good time.
His music selection is so vibrant and fun. It doesn't appeal to just one generation. You know, he really makes it a good time. And people come out and they dance.
And the fun doesn't stop there. An after party with avant-garde composer, pianist, and singer Ratty Skirvix follows in the big room.
He has a huge following in this area. So he's actually going to start the after party at 8 o'clock. And he's going to do a solo one-man show with the piano. And then at 9 o'clock, he actually has a trio, so the members of his trio are going to join him.
You can network with over 60 visual and performing arts organizations as WWNO hosts the 4th Annual Culture Collision at Generations Hall, 310 Andrew Higgins Drive. 5:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. tomorrow night, Wednesday, September 5th. Admission is free. Hope to see you there. We have a little something extra for you in our Lanyap Corner. Jonathan Ferrara Gallery presents the 16th edition of the annual No Dead Artist National Juried Exhibition of Contemporary Art. The No Dead Artist Exhibition was founded in 1995 to give a voice to emerging artists. The exhibition's name is derived from the old adage that artists never achieve success until they are dead. No Dead Artist turns that notion on its head and gives emerging artists their first break in the art world. The exhibition has been a springboard for numerous artists, leading to national press coverage, recognition, gallery representation, and acquisitions by museums and other prominent collections. The 16th edition of this exhibition will feature 40 new works. The exhibition will run through September 29th with an opening reception on Saturday, September 8th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Jonathan Ferrara Gallery, 400 A Julia Street. The Noka Institute hosts a one-night-only benefit performance of The World Is My Home, The Life of Paul Robeson, celebrating the career of the groundbreaking African-American artist Paul Robeson. The show stars acclaimed touring actor Stogie Kenyatta. The performance will be followed by a question-and-answer session with Mr. Kenyatta, along with Keith Plessy and Phoebe Ferguson, descendants of the litigants in the historic Plessy versus Ferguson court case and founders of the Plessy and Ferguson Foundation. The discussion will center around the fight for civil rights in America. The World Is My Home, The Life of Paul Robeson, takes place on Saturday, September 8th at 8 p.m. in NOCA's Frieda Lupin Memorial Hall, that's located at 2800 Charter Street. More information at NOCCA, N-O-C-C-A, Institute.com. And across town, at the African American Museum, a special reception for The Power of Art as Healing, an exhibition by renowned New Orleans artist Richard C. Thomas. As New Orleans continues to heal and redevelop in the seventh year after Hurricane Katrina, Thomas has created 56 new paintings that illustrate the power of art as healing. The exhibit explores the cultural cornerstones of New Orleans. The reception will honor some of the subjects in the exhibit, including Chief Monk Boudreaux of the Golden Eagles Mardi Gras Indian Tribe. There will also be a reading by Keith Weldon Medley, the author of We as Free Men, Plessy vs. Ferguson. A reception for The Power of Art as Healing, an exhibit by visual artist and educator Richard C. Thomas, will be held on Saturday, September 8th from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the New Orleans African American Museum, 1418 Governor Nichols Street in historic Treme. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next week at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.